Let's go on a spree through TV land.
Our era, the era of television.
Yes, sir, it's got everything, this TV.
That was such a pleasant little song. I had to just let it go and listen to it. I couldn't even jump in. It was so delightful to my ears.
It's actually impossible to harmonize with me. I don't know if you know that. Many have tried. Oh, you'll have to excuse us. We're just making a big to-do right now.
We are. We're making a big to-do because this is the first episode of Season 2.
Dos.
This time it's personal.
This time it's personal.
This is Season 2 of Episode 0. Welcome, everyone. And we're so glad that you've followed us on this journey of growth and exploration.
Mm-hmm. Season 2 has a lot of things that we don't even know about yet.
Yeah, a lot of amazing ideas coming up. I wish we could do, like, this season on, have, like, little clips of things that we don't even know have happened yet.
Last season, on season one of episode zero.
And it's just, like, completely meaningless clips.
Well, actually, most of the clips are just you and me recording ourselves and then sending it to each other and not hearing each other. And so then having to erase those clips and reconfigure our microphones. That's actually a majority of season one.
Episode zero of season one, the recovered files.
Yeah, exactly. Although we only technically aired 12 episodes, there was like enough footage recorded for like 37 episodes.
37, 38, you know, at least.
It's going to be like, the Prince vault. You know how they found like, they right. found enough songs for him to release an album every like year for decades. It's going to be like yeah. that.
We're backlogged, like, up the wazoo.
Tons of terrible TV show ideas that we just
keep going with this.
You know, there's some friggin' gold mine in there. There's some nugget that no one's gonna find until, like, 2052, and...
I'll play it at your funeral. Don't worry.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Ugh, I have to tell you about the salad I ate earlier.
Please. I've actually been eating salads myself recently.
It's because it's spring and you're like, I just want a salad.
No, I never want to. No, that's not me. I never want a salad. I'm feeling very good about myself because I'm actually eating one. But tell me about your salad.
Oh, okay. So your salad is like a guilt salad.
Yeah, my salad is like, for some reason, one of the moms in our classroom like baked a million cupcakes and like left them in our classroom. And so I was eating like a steady diet of buttercream frosting for like 5 days.
And then you had to adjust quickly.
Yeah, yeah. And then basically my levels were very off. I was actually at like the allergist and they're like, we're just going to take your blood pressure. And I was like, no, don't.
I'm afraid of what you might find.
It's just cupcakes in there.
A steady stream of cupcakes.
It's just buttercream frosting.
Oh my gosh. So, well, yeah. This salad, mm-hmm. this was arugula, some heirloom tomatoes, avocado, a drizzle of extra virgin olive oil, a little bit of balsamic, just a splash, just a splash on top, and then a sprinkling of sea salt.
Mmm.
And it was just gorgeous. You know how you can like call a salad gorgeous, but you can't really call any other food gorgeous?
No, yeah. I mean, the thing is also the way you describe salads. It's like, you could be like, it was a bed of garbage. sprinkled with just a grating of hobo asshole and just a drizzle, just a little drizzle of cat urine. And so, yeah, it was a delicious salad.
And then just a little pigeon turd splashed on top.
Exactly. No, but I know what you mean. You can't like be like, oh, that's a gorgeous hamburger.
Exactly.
I mean, you can.
Yeah, sure. But it's like describing like a work of art, you know?
Absolutely.
The beauty of food. So, I know you've read the book Cooked mm-hmm. by Michael Pollan.
I read like the first two chapters, and there are like four main chapters, so I think I read the whole thing.
Okay, yeah, that totally counts, in my opinion. Yeah. So I did the same thing with the Netflix series because I've watched 2 of the 4 episodes.
Oh, so we're on the same page.
Yeah, we're totally on the same page. Except you're on the page and I'm on the internet. I also, like, read the Omnivore's Dilemma mm-hmm. back in the day when, you know, Michael Pollan started to become a part of our lives.
Yeah, he was, like, the cool guy that everyone cited in college.
Yeah, oh, exactly. And, like, he still is. He still is, like, the cool, like, knowledgeable guy that's, like, guiding everyone's choices.
I think he's, like, primarily responsible for why those gecko shoes became very popular.
Gecko shoes? What gecko shoes?
You know, the ones that are, like, all the toes. You can see all the toes.
He that's him? He did that?
I think he inspired that. I think he was the guy that was, like, no, you know what? I don't think this is it. But around the same time, there was some guy that was, like, well, actually, people have been running for centuries without shoes in Mayan
civilizations. That whole movement. That whole movement. When we had to watch people just walking around without shoes.
And I had to stare
in,
at their
everyday city
situations. Exactly. They're fucking toe sprinkles everywhere. Over. Yeah.
I bet Michael Pollan has, like, huge feet.
Oh, my God. Intimidating.
I mean, I'm dead serious. I bet he has, like, huge Birkenstocks. Just, like, massive.
I bet Michael Pollan has the swinginest dick this side of Mississippi.
That's not what I was talking about.
I bet he's got the biggest cucumber you've ever seen.
Not what I was talking about.
I bet he's got the biggest yams you ever seen this side of a sweet potato pie.
I would use the term Japanese eggplant for that.
I think that's not doing him justice.
But yeah, I mean, like, I don't know how you feel about Michael Pollan. I mean, I've gleaned a little bit from this conversation, but this is how I feel about him. Mm-hmm. I want him to be proud of me.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And I'm, like, angry that I want him to be proud of me. Mm-hmm. It's like a parental relationship. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I just want to do right by him, but I'm, like, angry that I'm emotionally tethered to that. And I feel like that's, like, what he's done to, like, everybody, right? Like,
no, I absolutely agree. I think after I read some of it, I was like, he's right. Like, I need to be sitting down at a table while I eat, like, with other people who are eating. And I made a very conscious effort to be like, uh-uh, I'm not going to eat on the go in my car. I'm going to sit down at the table. And that lasted, like, 3 weeks because, honestly, I needed to catch up on Scandal, so.
Right. Well, this is exactly what my idea is all about. So this show would be Michael Pollan inspirationally shaming people into making drastic changes to their eating habits like a one-on-one level. You know, it profiles one person who's just like a normal person. Not like a crazy, like, oh, I only eat potato chips.
Yeah.
But like, maybe I eat potato chips, you know, 60% of the time.
Yeah, or like, I lied to my sister and I was like, yeah, I just have to go make some chicken. And like, really, I had bought chicken fried rice from down the block at the takeout.
Right, exactly. Like, normal people, yeah. Right? So he would meet this person, he would, like, awkwardly, like, live with them.
Like, he's, like, in their trundle bed.
Yeah, pull out the trundle for Uncle Mike. And he would just, like, live there for, you know, a week and, like, just, like, be quietly, like, assessing.
Oh, so for the first week it's just the silent approach. He's just observational.
Yeah, he's like, he's not even taking notes.
In and of itself would be actually the most judgmental, I think.
He's just absorbing data.
You're just like trying to like moments. Eat your breakfast. You're like fucking like crunching oat bran in like the living room. And he's just like watching you.
Yeah, he's just silent. And then like there comes this consultation. That's kind of like set up like an intervention type thing. But it's not a group of people. It's just you and him. In, like, a very aesthetically pleasing studio room.
Many succulents.
Yeah, there's, like, some ferns in the background. There's, like, some very placid colors.
There was, like, a vertical horticulturalist that kind of designed one of the room, like, walls.
Yeah, and it's, like, Michael Pollan's friend. He's like, oh, my friend, you know. And you sit down with him and you have this, like, life-altering, deep conversation about how his, like, work and theories can directly impact your choices. And then the next week is like making the changes. But the serious part is, because, okay, you know, like when you read On Divorce Dilemma, you can just like you did, you know, cry and then like make your meals for a week and then return to your, you know, frozen pizza life.
Exactly.
But like with this, he's going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Like in a month, he comes back. And it's not in a way of like, oh, you didn't do what I told you to do. He'll just be like, let's talk about it. Which is even worse.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, or my other thought for this was that he's silent in the consultation, or he's silent before the consultation. And then, like, during the consultation, he just, like, drops all of this knowledge. He just, like, takes a single Cheerio and he breaks down, like, the cultural, historical, nutritional significance of the Cheerio that you had, like, on Wednesday morning. And it's, like, totally life-changing. But then when he comes back to your home, he's silent again. And he's just,
and
like...
he's just holding a Cheerio in his hand. In his very large hand.
In his very large hand. Small Cheerio. He's holding a single Cheerio. It's like, what's that thing in Inception? The thing that, like, keeps you grounded?
Yeah. He like spins it on the counter.
Exactly. Yeah, he's like spinning the Cheerio, and like, but he's not interacting with you. Like you're like about to eat a deviled egg, and he like takes the deviled egg like gently out of your hand and like smashes deviled it against egg. The wall.
No, I don't think he would ever become aggressive.
Okay. This is just my fantasy.
Yeah. Wait, this is your fantasy? Okay.
I guess Japanese I like someone with more of a heavy hand.
What'd you say?
I said, I guess I like someone with a heavy hand.
I think you have a crush on Michael Pollan.
I think I have like a BDSM like dream sequence with Michael Pollan.
And at the end, like after everything's over, you eat like a roasted pig together.
Exactly.
Like a smoked pig.
We dig a hole in my backyard and stick some fucking cabbage and a cow down there, and we just like make fucking beef kimchi.
Yeah. And you make love for hours, and then you just
oh my
eat it
god,
all.
we dig a hole to ferment ourselves. Like it's just
your skin is like actually turning into kimchi. Your skin is just like glassy cabbage.
This is everything I pictured, Michael Pollan.
I'm gonna tweet at Michael Pollan. But yeah, so I was trying to think of the name for this show. Which is tough. I was like, maybe it's like the everyday dilemma.
Oh yeah, from On the Worst.
You got
dilemma.
Anything?
Got it. I was like, where'd you get that from? Got it. Okay, yeah. I was thinking of Cooked. I was like only working with that title.
Yeah.
I'm like
shamed.
I think because you and I went in very different directions, like I'm coming up with lots of very inappropriate titles that I can't really share.
Maybe I can't consult with you on this.
Maybe I'm not the best partner, so I just want to call it Cocked. but like it'd be called Pollen Cocked.
It's like poppycock, but pollen cocked. I don't think I can consult with you on this project.
I think I'm not a partner in this. I think you make the show and I make like the porn spinoff.
Which would probably make a lot of money. I bet you're not the only sick fucko out there who's like into Michael Pollan.
Sick fucking foodie out there.
With his big feet and his big hands.
You brought up the big feet and the big hands. I said he had a big dick.
Exactly.
I just made an inference.
Outsourcing has its values, and it certainly makes life easier, but it renders us all into passive consumers. And I don't know about you, but to me, that's my least proud identity. I prefer my identity as a maker of things, as a producer, as a provider, and not just a consumer.
Season two,
Smooth. Smooth. Jazz.
City 101.9. Shout out to CD 101.9. Tri-state, where we at?
I feel blessed to share the airwaves with you.
Yeah. Blessed.
So since we've already established that Michael Pollan is a sex worker, I actually had another idea. And I actually, so, you know, like, you know, when you have an idea and you write it down and I'm like, I don't know why I had this idea or where I was when I had this idea, mm-hmm. but I liked it so much that I put a crying, laughing face next to it. So, I guess in the moment, I'm assuming I was drunk. Because, of it. Yeah. So, anyway, basically what the show is the goal of the show, what we're trying to achieve, is to detach the stigma that is associated with erotic dancers, you know, a.k.a. strippers. And so the ingenue of the series is named Sadie, and her kind of...
Is that her real name or her stripper name?
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that. I think it's most likely an invented name.
What's your real name? Not your stripper name.
But basically, it's Sadie, the inspirational stripper.
Is that what it's called?
Well, that's what I named it in my thoughts.
That sounds like a children's book. Sadie's big day on the pole.
First of all, Sadie sounds like a dog name now that I think about it.
Go on.
And so I'm just going to kind of riff off of the notes that I wrote here because I really don't know where I was going. But basically, Sadie is not ashamed of her profession. And what she does is she actually uses her stage time as a platform for different social issues.
Okay.
And so I think that what she does is she uses a lot of, like, inspirational songs in her set. Man in the Mirror, We Are the World, The Rains in Africa, Greatest Love of All. Mm-hmm. And I think what she does is she ties the song into maybe a current relevant story that's happening, or maybe just generally some kind of plight or issue that is...
Is she like acting out, like it's kind of like performance art? Like, is she like, you know, acting scenes out, like...
Yeah, I think she has, like, I think she's prop heavy. I think she's prop heavy.
Prop heavy. Okay. she out with like a basket of props.
Yeah, exactly. I think she's a lower, like, I think what she thought she was going to be doing was like burlesque.
Right.
But like her act wasn't maybe together enough for burlesque.
Or she just makes more money at the strip club.
Or maybe she makes more money. Oh. That brings up another idea of she's, like, a very successful stripper because she kind of, like, is a real pick-me-up for the 2 p.m. crowd. and I think that she, like, bankrolls money. And, like, what does she do with that money? You know what
does
I mean?
Does she, like, give to charities? Maybe she's like the Peter Pan of strippers.
Yeah. Or maybe she runs, like, an anti-kill shelter.
The Robin Hood of strippers.
The Robin Hood. What did you say at first?
I said the Peter Pan of strippers. No, I meant the Robin Hood of strippers.
The Peter Pan. I just went with it. I knew what you were talking about, yeah, too, yeah, and yeah. I was like, yeah, yeah, Peter Pan.
Yeah. No, she steals from the rich.
And gives to crocodiles. yeah, like, I think it'd be cool if, like, half the time she was Sadie, the inspirational stripper, and then the other half the time she's,
I can't
like,
get behind that name. I'm sorry. I cannot get behind that name.
It could be a placeholder. It's a placeholder.
Jesus Christ, working title.
And then the other half of the time, she's, like, Heidi, who, like, runs a really successful, like, animal shelter.
Mm. Yeah, she should have two lives.
Absolutely. And I think people on either side have no idea. Like, she's a mystery otherwise. They're like, we don't know where Sadie goes after work.
Yeah. But there should be, like, one person, like, one, like, really, you know, sweet, good guy who, you know, works at the animal shelter.
Or the strip club.
That would actually be better because that would be the least expected route.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, he's, like, a bartender at the strip club and he, like, does the whole thing. But at the end of the day, he's actually, like, a really nice, awesome guy.
Yeah.
And then he, like, his dog gets sick.
his dog named Sadie.
And yeah, and they're like, oh, dog named Sadie. And she like sees it on the check-in and she's like, what? Sadie, that's my stripper name. But she doesn't say that out loud, of course.
And she didn't realize that he actually named his dog after her.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
So she's like treating the dog and she's like, oh, this dog is so amazing. She has like an emotional moment with the dog. She has like a flash to herself on the pole doing like, you know, an inspirational dance about climate change. She starts crying. She comes out with the dog. The dog's better.
She's doing like happy feet.
She passes it to him. And he's like, and they lock eyes and they're like, what? And he's like, Sadie? And then he looks at the dog and he's like, Sadie? And then he looks at her and he's like, Sadie? And the dog looks up because he's confused.
The dog like yips at the same time that she's like, yes?
Yeah.
And then the dog and Sadie look at each other. And then the dog and the owner look at each other. And then Sadie and the dog owner look at each other.
Yep.
It's a triangle.
And then what happens? Is that the end of the show?
Well, in my head, then maybe like the dog and Sadie like switch bodies. But no, I don't think so. I think that that's going in a totally different direction.
Sadie, the inspirational dog stripper. Stripper dog.
Stripper dog. But it's a stripper for dogs.
A stripper for dogs. I bet a dog would be such a bad stripper. They're so uncoordinated.
Have you ever seen someone try to put clothes on a dog? I think it depends on the breed.
I think a Chihuahua could like really handle that gracefully.
There just wouldn't be. Because of their small bodies, it wouldn't allow for costume changes and things like that.
Right.
But you know, I mean, I think it's.
Do you know what I love when dogs wear those little boots?
Always. They hate them, I'm sure, but like people are so happy when they see them.
If there was a stripper dog, I would love for it to be wearing those little boots and like have to like very slowly take each one off.
I actually think its handler comes on stage and like assists them.
Oh wait, maybe it's like a duo. Oh my God, wait, it's a duo. So Sadie and Sadie, they start doing Sadie and Sadie, which is like a special show.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh.
And it's like she's stripping and she's stripping the dog. And then they it becomes a thing. It's like this novelty. They become a YouTube sensation. Well, maybe not YouTube. They become a you porn sensation.
I was going to say like a Pornhub sensation.
And then they blow up and they're making millions of dollars. And maybe the next season is like, you know, Sadie and this guy and the dog like living a happy, wealthy life.
But then some kind of lawsuit gets thrown at her from her life back at the club, and it pulls her back into that life.
The dark, seedy past.
Yeah, exactly. Sadie has to confront her doggone past.
Oh, God. What a great catchphrase for the season. Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is good. So wait, what should we actually call it?
Oh, well, I'm trying
to... Sadie Dancer.
Sadie. Well, I do still like Sadie. I was going to say it doesn't have to be Sadie, but I love the idea Sadie's of Sadie stage? Being like a dog name. And so, I don't know where to go. I just love the idea of an inspirational stripper.
Sadie's pole.
Sadie stripped.
Stripped.
Stripped. I think there is a show called
Stripped. I was just going to say, isn't there a show called Stripped, but it's not about a stripping dog lady duo?
Yeah, I think it's about like candy stripers or something. I don't actually know.
I think it's like a Michael Pollan show. About like food.
About him stripping while making food.
You dirty bird. Back here. You sick fuck.
You sick fuck. You can cut your So the other day, or I shouldn't say the other day, it was a couple months ago. A couple months ago, my mom and I went to Mount Vernon. Have you ever brought your mom there?
Have I ever brought my mom there? Like you do with your mother? Mount Vernon, I've been there with my parents.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's a hot spot. It's a hotbed for middle-aged people.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Middle-aged people love the Civil War and the Revolutionary War and Washington fucking everything.
I loved Mount Vernon.
Anyway, for backstory, it's one of George Washington's mansions, or maybe his only mansion. I don't know. Either way, it was, like, passed down through Martha Washington's family. And, like, you know, I told my mom about it, and she was like, what? And so, obviously, we had to go. And so we go there, and all I was expecting was for us to do a tour of the house, see the grounds. My mother loves to, like, walk the grounds of estates.
Of course. Are you kidding me? If I had my druthers, that's, like, all I would do.
It's, like, the best open house she's ever been to. And so we get there, and all of a sudden there was just, like, buses and buses and buses in the parking lot. And I had heard that it was never super crowded, but it was clear that, like, there was some event happening. Mm-hmm. And we get there, and there was, like, a huge reenactment happening.
Shut up.
It was, at first I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I'm just trying to pop in.
Are you kidding? YOLO. I've never seen a reenactment.
I'm telling you, it was like the coolest effing thing that I've ever seen. Everyone's just, there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these fucking foot soldiers. Like,
did you meet, like, your future husband that day?
I think they all kind of are very inbred community. And we're walking around, and they all pitch tents, like they plan on camping there, like staying there for nights and nights. And they were reenacting battle scenes, and it was just glorious. It was incredible. They were like, there hasn't been a reenactment of this size north of the Mason-Dixon in over a dog's age. And we're like, how long is that? And so we go, and we're walking around, and there are people who have, like, set up tables who are, like, selling things, and they're all in character. And it's like, I bought a piece of bread with some jam and cheese on it for, like, 1,000 pesos or whatever the
pesos
they were asking for.
It's like the Mexican-American War. I don't know.
I don't know. Yen. What were we working with back then? And I go to this table that had all these, like, jewelry pieces out. And, you know, there were these a couple of women behind there, like, oh, yes, like, feel free to, like, look at any of the gems. And
did they sell you, like, a cursed gem?
Yeah, exactly. I got a crystal with a ghost. I, like, hear them. They're, like, they kind of present the table. And then they, like, start talking amongst themselves. And I can hear them just, like, bitching about, like, other. They're like, well, you know, Betsy didn't show up because she knew that I was going to be wearing this dress. And I just hear them, like, shit talking all the other women, like, involved in this whole thing who clearly follow their crazy husbands around the country. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, like, this is, like, a whole, like, reality show where you follow these people.
That would be such a great show. Well, I feel like it could go either way. It could either be an awesome reality show, which I would get obsessed with.
Yes.
That would be awesome. And I'm so shocked that they haven't done that.
Agreed.
It could also be a great, like, fictionalized show.
Yes, absolutely. I think PBS could take that on. I already have an amazing title for it, and it's called The Real Daughters of the Revolution. Get it?
Oh, so it's focused on the women.
Well, it was just supposed to be a play on The Real Housewives of...
Yeah. Oh, okay, no,
yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it doesn't have to be. It could be The Real Daughters and Sons of the Revolution or something like that. But I loved the idea of, like, following these, like, shit-talking women who are dressed like pioneers.
Oh, my God. It's all the drama and cattiness of any other situation, except it's dressed up.
But with, like,
in period
garb. With yards and yards of lace.